Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here with a wonderful actress who has put together an amazing career. Few people have put together as wonderful and diverse a career in acting as this lady, and she's terrific, and she's still going strong. Her latest is a CD that everyone can get, and it's Edgar Allan Poe's Ligeia, and a tale of mystery and imagination. Is that right? Mystery and imagination, and it is wonderful, and everyone's got to get it. Elizabeth Shepherd, welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. Well, listen, hello, everybody.
Well, I'm delighted to have you. And give us a little summary of the record. We want everyone to buy it. And I imagine Amazon and Spotify and everywhere they can get good CDs, they can get it. But how long in the process did this all take? What was the genesis of this project, and how long did it take from start to finish?
Well, Matt Bekoff and I had been talking about this for some time. Because I was in Roger Corman's film with Vincent Price, The Tomb of Ligeia, which is a great favorite on the horror film circuit, I, of course, was very interested in the original Edgar Allan Poe story of Ligeia. And sometimes at the conventions, I would do a reading from the original Poe story, which is very long and intricate, but wonderful. And so we had thought, oh, why don't I record the whole story, which is what we have done now, with three of Edgar Allan Poe's poems, the very famous Annabel Lee, and then a poem called Romance, and then a poem called Elizabeth, very appropriately,
right.
because which was actually written about his cousin, Elizabeth Rebecca Herring, from Baltimore.
Right.
And another short poem, which apparently he did write for his cousin Elizabeth, but in some later editions it was attributed to somebody else, but it was intended for her. So we have the whole of Ligeia with four poems by Edgar Allan Poe. And what is so wonderful, you know, what Poe has in common with Shakespeare is the emotional stakes in the stories are very high, and also the stories are told in this beautiful, intricate, heightened language, and it is so exciting to hear beautiful language beautifully presented. You know, in our culture today, we are losing language, we are losing vocabulary.
Right.
Which I think is very distressing and alarming and dangerous, because if you don't have the words, then you can't put ideas into words, which then in the end means you don't even have the ideas.
Yeah.
So any way of having people appreciate and enjoy words, I think this is very, very important. And I think that to bring Edgar Allan Poe to life was an exciting thing to do. So we'd been talking about it for some time, and then it all happened very, very quickly with Mark Redfield, who has a audio company. We recorded it a few weeks ago and put it into production, and so now we have it, and it's quite exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting, and I'm thrilled that Poe is getting so much attention now. In 1849, when he passed away in the street, basically in the gutter, if somebody would have said that man's stories and that man's poems and work are going to be around for hundreds of years and school children will be learning them. You would have said, are you crazy? This guy, you know, I mean, it was such an unbelievable, sad life that Poe had.
Yes.
But the legacy
The man's, you know, his emotional imagination. I love what he says about his stories, the stories of mystery and imagination.
Yeah.
And, you know, Vincent Price and Roger Corman made a whole series of these stories, films, based on Edgar Allan Poe's stories. And between them, they never thought of them as horror films. They thought of them as gothic tales. And and indeed, the Tomb of Ligeia, which was the last one, really the most elaborate, with a wonderful script by Robert Towne, is quite a tribute to Poe.
Yeah, no question. Let me remind folks that are just tuning in, or maybe just turning on their radio a little late, you're listening to the wonderful actress Elizabeth Shepherd. And if you go to ElizabethShepherdActor.com, I believe that's the correct email, you could find out a lot more. And you've got to buy the new CD. It's Edgar Allan Poe's Ligeia.
Ligeia, yes.
Ligeia.
Edgar Allan Poe's Ligeia, A Tale of Mystery and Imagination, read by Elizabeth Shepherd.
Yeah.
And actually, aside from my website, if you go to facebook.com/ElizabethShepherdActor, you can. There's a lot of information on my Facebook page, my professional Facebook page, which we welcome people to visit.
When you started looking into Poe, and again, I'll remind everyone, Elizabeth Shepherd here with me, Frank McKay. When you started looking into Ligeia, after you made the film with Vincent Price or Roger, the great Roger Corman, you know, in his low budget ways, but amazing stories that he's done. He's been on the show a couple of times, Roger Corman.
Oh, Roger, you know, Roger Corman is such an amazing man of the cinema. I mean, aside from all those many, many films he made, sometimes in a few days, ours was an epic. It was 5 whole weeks.
Wow.
With Corman. A whole week on location for this wonderful wrecked, the ruin of Castleacre Priory, which was the abbey that Verdon Fell lives in. But Roger Corman, the influence he has had in American cinema, you know, the way in which he started off many, many prominent directors like Martin Scorsese and Coppola. You know, Roger Corman was known as the king of the B pictures. Well, for what he brought to American cinema, in my opinion, he's the king of the whole alphabet.
Yeah.
And he was wonderful to work with. A very, very classy guy and a consummate filmmaker, you know. He entrusted the acting to us. We discussed the roles beforehand. And then he could concentrate on the set, you know, with telling the story in his visual pictures, which are so beautiful. And, of course, it was a great thrill to work with Vincent Price, who, you know, I feel he's been underestimated as the classical actor that he was. You know, he was great fun in a lot of the genre films that he kind of sent up, you know, but he was a wonderful classical actor. Regarded these gothic tales like Shakespeare. And so with my Shakespeare background too, you know, we really felt at home in that heightened world.
And again, Ligeia, Edgar Allan Poe's Ligeia, A Tale of Mystery and Imagination, as read by actor Elizabeth Shepherd. And again, go to ElizabethShepherdActor.com. Producers of this are also top-notch. Matt Beckoff and Mark Redfield, they know their business and are very, very good at that. And actually, a quick turnaround. You recorded it a few weeks ago, and now it's out and available, and it's absolutely terrific. Everyone buy the new CD, Frank McKay Here, with the star, the actor, reading it, and you could tell by her voice, it's going to be a beautiful listen. And Elizabeth Shepherd is here with us. Elizabeth, if you don't mind, let's do a little bit of your history. And if you don't mind, let's start from the beginning. Where were you born and where were you raised?
I was born in London, England. You can, although I've emigrated many, many years ago, you can still hear I am English by birth. But as a newborn, I was on the boat with my mother to join my father in Burma, now known as Myanmar. But my parents were missionaries, Methodist missionaries. And so my earliest years were in Burma. You know, that beautiful, the land of pagodas and sunshine and smiling people, except they've been ruled by the horrible military for so many decades. And then, not anticipating the Japanese invasion, we left Burma to come on furlough when I was a little girl, and came to London in the Blitz, which was a bit of a shock and quite a contrast. So I started my career in England, and the Tomb of Ligeia actually was made in 1964, before I emigrated in 1965. In England, at that time, I started in theater. I really got my training in repertory theater. You know, in the old days, even in the United States, there were many more permanent companies where you would be engaged for a whole season and you would play roles that you were absolutely right for and roles that you were absolutely wrong for, which was a wonderful training. Now, you know, there's very, very few, almost none of these permanent companies still exist. And of course, when I started, theater was it. Media, you know, was coming up. And in the 60s and 70s in England, it was really quite the golden age of television, where all the best writers were writing for television. So I did a lot of television, and my first movie was with the great Michael Powell, called The Queen's Guards. So I was living in New York in 1965 for several, till the early 70s, and living in the Lower East Side and getting held up regularly.
No kidding. Really?
It was always...
Wow.
Yes, it was always guns, not knives, not guns.
Wow.
But then I was offered a season at the Shakespeare Theatre in Ontario, Canada, and I thought this was safer for me and my little boy. I was bringing him up by myself. I was a single mother. I did a lot of theater in Canada. And then curiosity took me to Hollywood, where I was cast in Damien Omen 2, another film which is very popular on the horror film circuit. And I got my eyes pecked out because I was the first one who knew who Damien was, and I was trying to warn everybody.
Wow.
My role, Joan Hart. That was quite an adventure. You know, you have to learn all sorts of new skills. I had to, for The Tomb of Ligeia, I had to learn how to ride side saddle.
Did you know how to ride? Did you know how to ride?
No, I was not a horsewoman at all, but my character was. So, you know, this is the thing about actors. You take on the character of your character. So I put fear aside, and Rowena was an accomplished horsewoman. So Elizabeth Shepherd became an accomplished horsewoman. And the side saddle is so designed... to keep you are braced over hooks on, you know, under your right knee, and then you're braced on with a left between a hook and the stirrup. I felt it actually more comfortable than riding astride.
Let me remind.
Then for Damien, The bird wrangler was the same man, Ray Burbarek, who did the birds for Hitchcock's movie, The Birds.
Wow. I guess, boy, they got the top man in birds, that's for sure. Let me remind folks that are just tuning in late or just turning on their radios a little late. Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, Elizabeth Shepherd, a wonderful actor, is with us today. And we are talking about her new CD, and it's a must-get for everyone. Everyone must get it. It's Edgar Allan Poe's Ligeia, A Tale of Mystery and Imagination, as read by actor Elizabeth Shepherd. It's just a must-get. And just to listen to your voice, I think people will buy it just to listen to that beautiful voice of yours. And I'm sure I'm not the first to mention it. The voice and the diction of an actor of your ilk that was trained in the theater, and you mentioned you could hear the London in my voice. You can, but you could also hear the training in there. It's not a typical London voice. It's a wonderful thing to listen to. Quite frankly, it's musical. It's wonderful. How early on, and maybe even go back to Burma, did you start thinking about being an actress? And was there anyone in Burma that had any influence on you that would have pointed towards the theater? Was there any kind of theater scene at all in Burma?
I had no theatrical connections in my family or friends, but you know, my father was a preacher, and there's a lot in common between the theater and the church. In fact, the theater kind of grew out of the church in many ways. You know, with the reenacting of the mystery plays and. Also, I was brought up with the feeling of vocation, that what you do in life is not just a job, it is a calling. And so in the same way as my father, you know, would wear his heart on his sleeve in a pulpit to influence and touch a congregation, so I sort of translated that to the idea of doing it as an actor, not I wouldn't call it performing in public, but using your own heart and your own humanity to touch other people, my very first public appearances were at missionary meetings with my mother. When we came back to England, she would be dressed in Burmese costume, and I, a little girl that I was, also in Burmese costume, I would do Burmese dances at the missionary meetings, which I loved. It was fun. And I would perform at, recite at church, recite concerts, and at my boarding school, I was in all the plays. So it seemed as if, you know, that was my gift, the thing that I was equipped to do. Like my mother played the piano; her hands were just at home on the piano keys, and I don't have that facility at all. But if I see a script or a story, the words come off the page for me. That was the gift that I was given. And so I think that that I really always was attracted to being an actor.
Do you remember when you first started meeting people who were making a living as actors, and who, if you could remember, was the first individual that you met that was actually doing this for a living?
At my boarding school, at holiday time when my parents or somebody would come to take me out, you know, for a special holiday weekend. I can remember at the boarding house that we were all staying, there were tours, a touring company of the Song of Norway, and these were the first real actors that I had met, and I was thrilled. Oh, I was so thrilled talking to them and hearing about, you know, how they were going around the country with the show and everything, and in fact going to see the show. And then so I met these actors on stage and off. Well, that was very thrilling. But really, I started in the profession because the Sunday Times newspaper ran a student festival. They would come to all the universities and colleges and see the plays that we were doing and choose certain ones to be in a competitive festival. And the first year it was held in Bristol University, where I studied. I wasn't in the play that year. But the next year it was held in London, and we did a new translation of a play by Ugo Betti, who was very fashionable in the West End at that time. And so a lot of professional people came to see our play because it was a new Ugo Betti play. And I had a wonderful role, all of 19, with my hair dyed black, a sort of Anna Magnani character, the mother of the family. And it got professional attention. A woman called Wendy Toy, who had been a dancer and now was a producer, introduced me to an agent, and he sent me out for auditions to various repertory theatres, and I got in to a couple of them and chose to go to the Manchester Library Theatre, and so that's how I started.
Well, let me remind folks once again, for latecomers, you're listening to just a wonderful actress, and she has a resume a mile long, and you know, probably a 100 things close to it on between TV and major films, and just tremendous. Elizabeth Shepherd is our very special guest. And if you walked away, let me remind everyone you're listening to Breaking It Down, but much more importantly, you are listening to Elizabeth Shepherd, and her latest is a must-get, Edgar Allan Poe's Ligeia, A Tale of Mystery and Imagination, as read by actor Elizabeth Shepherd. The producers are wonderful also. They really are top-notch. Mark Redfield and Matt Beckoff,
yeah.
And it's certainly worth mentioning. But again, Elizabeth, thrilled to have you here, and congratulations on the CD. And let me give your email one more time. And not your email, but your website, ElizabethShepherdActor.com. And everyone go there as a starting point. But Elizabeth, thrilled to have you once again.
And it might be useful to say that I spell my name like looking after sheep. Shepherd, Shepherd.
Ah, right.
It's the original British way, Shepherd.
Yeah, well, that's. I'll tell you. Do you know much about your family history? Do you know how far you go back in England?
No, I've never done that. I haven't gone onto one of those heritage sites. I'm sure it would be very interesting.
Yeah,
I think there's Welsh. I know there's Welsh in our and probably other European countries too.
You know, I got to hand it to your family, and you know, everyone who went into missionary work, they're very giving of themselves. They give up their home and they go to some, you know, in some places, godforsaken places. But again, Burma being a very beautiful place, but still not the conditions that you would be used to in London. and I would imagine anyway, and to go there, and it really sets an example for giving for a child.
There's something in my history actually that which is connected with the missionary work that is quite unusual, because my father, he was a pastor. He wasn't a medical missionary, but he was. He did a lot of work with the leprosy hospital in Mandalay, and when he was in 1944, when he went back to organize the missionaries going back into Burma, he discovered that he had himself contracted leprosy. Which was extremely unusual for somebody working with leprosy patients to actually contract the disease themselves. And there are so many myths about this disease, which people are so frightened of, and the stigma associated with it, as if you must have done something terrible to deserve to be stricken with this illness. In the 1940s, there was no guaranteed cure. Nowadays, leprosy can be cured very easily with multi-drug treatment, and in fact, very few people are even susceptible to the illness. Only, 5% of anybody would ever get leprosy. But my father felt that he must have been chosen by God to bear some special witness from inside this disease that Jesus had cured but had never endured himself. Indeed, the grace with which he accepted this as part of his ministry was very inspiring to many, many people in India where he was treated. He was, in fact, cured. Because there was it had been found that Chalmugra oil, the injections of Chalmugra oil might cure some kinds of leprosy, and indeed he was cured, but it was a very grueling treatment.
Were they still of injections? Not to cut you off, but were they still segregating those afflicted with leprosy?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. So it was a dire tragedy in our family. There were tremendous separations. When he was beginning to be cured, my mother joined him, but I was not allowed because it was considered too dangerous, perhaps, for a child. And so that the separation, in the family for between the ages of, I didn't see my father between the ages of 7 and 16.
Wow. Oh, wow.
He spoke most eloquently about the fact that the stigma of the disease has to be cured. The disease is easily cured now, but the stigma really has not been cured. And so I persuaded the Methodist Church eventually to recognize his experience so that his ministry can be continued, his words about leprosy and the fact that it is an ordinary illness. It has a lot in common with TB. Anything that that can be done to educate people about to quell the myths that have grown up about this disease is important. So that was something quite unusual.
Yeah, I've never met anyone who knew anyone who had leprosy before. Elizabeth Shepherd is our very special guest, a wonderful actress. And her latest is a CD that everyone must get, Edgar Allan Poe's Ligeia, A Tale of Mystery and Imagination, as read by actor Elizabeth Shepherd. And everyone, it's a must get. And She has put together a career that is enviable. 99.9% of actors in this world would love to have a career like Elizabeth has and is still having, and it's a must-get. Frank McKay here with Elizabeth. A young girl to be separated from her father for that many years. You said 7 to, I think you said 15 or 7 to 16. It's got to be a traumatic experience. And did you get to talk to him on the phone? Did you get to communicate at all?
No, I mean, in those days, a separation was, you would have to travel by boat, and letters would have to go by boat. There could be cables. But no, we didn't talk on the phone. My mother and I made a recording for him, a vinyl record recording, to send him, you know, with greetings for his birthday, things like that. But the separation was, letters were the only thing. And I have preserved my father's letters from the sanatorium, where he is talking about the treatment, but also about how it feels to be treated like a leper. You know, it's still in our vocabulary. To call somebody a leper is to put them beyond the pale, and that has to change. It's not right.
Yeah. Well, listen, you're absolutely right. And just curious, side note here: does that record that you and your mother made for your father, is it still exist?
No, I wish it. I wish it was. I don't know what happened to it.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be
something? Obviously, with much traveling about. Because when my parents did come back when he was cured, he went into circuits, he was appointed at one church after another. And so there's a lot of traveling. It's a very, missionaries and actors go where the work is. So it's a nomadic experience. And I, over the years of my career, have gone between England and Canada and Los Angeles and New York, and so there's been a lot of living out of a lot of carting a suitcase around.
You mentioned being a single mother. My brother and I were raised by a divorced single mother, and to us they're sacred. The amount of work and the thanklessness sometimes that society has towards single mothers is terrible. But it's so nice to hear that somebody that was in the situation that my mother was, and so many others, where it would succeed in something as difficult as acting with a young child.
Well, I'm lucky that over the years, I was able to sustain myself as an actor. But it's different now. The profession has changed almost completely since I started in it, 60 years ago, where theater was it. There was it was always a competitive profession. But now, really, the artistry has been taken over by show business, celebrity has become the name of the game, not the quality of performance. I think that now, when I'm not on stage or acting, I teach Shakespeare at the Stella Adler Studio of Acting. And my young students, they have to create their own work. Because now with all the universities, with acting departments. Every June, hundreds and thousands of new actors go out into the profession, which hasn't enough work for those of us already in it. So it would be much harder for a young woman, and particularly a single mother, to sustain herself by acting nowadays, unless you become a big star.
You mentioned,
unless you become a celebrity.
Yeah, well, you mentioned some of the folks that you've worked with, and, of course, Bill Holden and Damien, The Omen 2, he was, on in that cast, headed that cast. Who are some of your contemporaries as you got to New York and started making your way to the top and to get to the point of having a steady career in film and TV? Who are some of the contemporaries that were working in the same, I guess they're going for the same auditions and working together? Who are some of the folks that you were around? Others from England? Were they,
Not necessarily. I'm now looking at a list of because you know very often you work with somebody and then you never see them again.
Well, let me let me change it up a bit. When did you come in contact with Roger Corman? Was it through an audition? Did he hear of you from somewhere else? How did the
Yes, Paul Myersberg was a friend of mine, and he was Roger's assistant, and so I think it was through him that then I was alerted. I knew nothing about Roger Corman, and I just knew Vincent Price from the film Laura, and so I, which, you know, was a completely different kind of a film. So I think it was through Paul, for instance, that I was auditioned and had a screen test and I got the part. It was because it was a love story, and Vincent Price was already 53 years old. I think Robert Town thought he would be too old for the role of Werdenfell. It should be a younger man, maybe Richard Chamberlain. But I mean, you couldn't imagine anybody else in that role than Vincent Price. But they needed a young woman who also had a certain maturity, you know, to match him. And I think because of my theater background, I was who they were looking for, and of course it was a dual role: the dead wife Ligeia and Rowena, who becomes the second wife. And then for Damien, they were looking for an English woman just after I had arrived in L.A. The question of the right place at the right time. I got the role, and it was a great thrill to work with William Holden. When you work with the best actors, because again, like Vincent, you know, a wonderful actor, so at home on the screen, it brings out the best work in you too. So it's always good to work with good people.
Let me again remind everyone, Elizabeth Shepherd is the wonderful voice that you're hearing, and she has been around a long time for a young gal, and she has seen a lot and has worked with some of the greats, and she is wonderful, one of the great character actors of our time, Elizabeth Shepherd. Her latest is Edgar Allan Poe's Ligeia, A Tale of Mystery and Imagination, as read by actor Elizabeth Shepherd. Producers on that, again, worth mentioning because they do tremendous work. Certainly Mac Beckwith and Mark Redfield, both of them terrific. And the CD could be had at Amazon and I guess Barnes & Noble, anywhere they sell good CDs. And this is a great one. This is a must to get everyone. And also, let me give you Elizabeth's website, ElizabethShepherdActor.com, and Shepherd is the old English way of spelling it, and she'll correct me if I'm wrong, but S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D, correct?
Yes, like looking after sheep, yes.
Right. So,
and I think that if you go onto my professional Facebook page, facebook.com, Elizabeth Shepherd Actor, there are links to get the CD.
And go there, and everyone buy it. It's a must. And again, Elizabeth Shepherd has been our very special guest. And look at her IMDb. It is a mile long, and there's so much impressive work there. But more importantly, watch her work. If after you get the CD, check out some of the films and her work. And, you know, we keep going back to Damien. The Omen 2, she was just wonderful in that. Disturbing, but wonderful. And of course, her work with Roger Corman, Vincent Price. And again, Elizabeth, I want to thank you very much for being here. Any last thoughts? We've got about 30 seconds left. Any live performances planned for the promotion of the CD?
Next week at the Mid-Atlantic Super Mega Festival in Baltimore, I'm appearing, and it's from Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of next week, and I shall be doing a shortened reading from Ligeia, and then in November. I will be at the Boston Super Mega Festival. And those dates, I am just looking up now.
I think the best and safest way is
yes,
to go to your website.
November the 1st and
yeah.
Yes, it's all on the website.
Right,
yes, it's November
there.
The 15th and 16th in Boston. So I love going to these conventions to meet the fans. I've been so touched that people love these movies. And, you know, in the theater, of course, one has contact with one's audience. But on film, we're separated. But at the conventions, we come together. I can meet my audience and they can meet me.
Well, listen, it's been a real honor talking to you. Your career it speaks for itself. But I'm thrilled to have you here. And I want everyone to buy the new CD, Edgar Allan Poe's Ligeia, A Tale of Mystery and Imagination, as read by actor Elizabeth Shepherd. And again, go to ElizabethShepherdActor.com. Shepherd is S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D. And go there and you can see all the dates that she'll be appearing. But congratulations on just an amazing career, wonderful career, still going strong. And certainly congratulations on the new CD. Elizabeth, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much, Frank. And I send my greetings to everybody who's been listening.
Yeah, and same here. I want to thank everyone for listening. And again, wonderful work by Mark Redfield and Matt Beckoff on producing this. It's wonderful. It's a must. Edgar Allan Poe's Ligeia, A Tale of Mystery and Imagination. Frank McKay signing off. Our very special guest has been Elizabeth Shepherd, wonderful actor. And check out her IMDb. It's a mile long, and it's so impressive. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.